use all kinds of cues to make sense of the world and of each other. It begins with color, light, and sound acting on a brain, but with experience, our perception becomes more like a product of the mind. Take when you guess at another person's age, race, sex, gender, size, class, or sexual orientation, all in the blink of an eye. These split-second conclusions can go from being things that help us see reality more efficiently to things that blind us from it permanently. Our guest today says implicit biases like these affect your decisions, whether or not you're consciously aware of them. He's a professor of law at the University of Oregon, and he holds both a PhD and a Juris Doctorate. Lately, he's been teaching workshops on implicit biases to help people learn to see their own blind spots. The next workshop like this is happening on campus tomorrow in Eugene, and Dr. Eric Gervin joins us now by phone. Dr. Gervin, welcome to The Exchange.
Thank you, Emily.
So I guess we'll have to start with kind of a textbook intro here, but what is an implicit bias?
Probably the best way to think about implicit bias is the process our brain uses to automatically categorize the world. We categorize things all the time. We categorize chairs, furniture, cars, everything. And we categorize people. And so that normal process of our brain categorizing the world leads us to sometimes treat people as if they're representatives of categories or stereotypes of those categories, even when we don't want to or mean to.
So it sounds like implicit biases, it's part of being human and a pretty important part of survival. What are some instances when it takes a turn for putting the blinders on you rather than helping you see things more clearly?
Yeah, one of the most common times or situations when implicit bias influences our decisions is when we have a lot of discretion or there's a lot of different options that we could choose from and any one of them is pretty close to equally good. It's in those situations that our implicit biases basically put a thumb on the scale and affect what it is that we choose.
Now, this makes me think of the experiment. We've heard it repeated many times where they'll take the same resume and send it out and just put different names on it. And depending on the associations people have with different names, whether they're male or female, whether they're traditionally African-American or white, has a real impact on how those resumes are received. Is this the kind of thing you're talking about?
Yes, that's basically how it works in those kinds of situations and real-life research on actual job applicants. You find that in those situations where people's qualifications are roughly equivalent, implicit biases tend to predict or influence who actually gets a nod for a job.
So we've established implicit bias isn't always a bad thing. Why do you want to help people deconstruct the biases they may not know they have?
So there's a few different parts of that. It's true that implicit bias helps us make sense of the world. We as a society have largely decided that there are certain categories, though, that shouldn't make a difference. We shouldn't be paying attention to someone's sex or race or ethnicity when we're making hiring decisions about them, for example. And it turns out from a lot of research that we think that we do, and that leads to problems in the sense of our society isn't as equal an opportunity as maybe we would like. So one of my goals is to try to help work with institutions and other people who are in those settings to try to close that gap.
We're talking with Dr. Eric Gervin. He is JD, PhD with the University of Oregon School of Law, also leading workshops on implicit bias in decision-making. There's one happening tomorrow at the Knight Library Browsing Room in Eugene. Might be too late to register for that. Is that the case, Eric?
I think probably, and that one is actually the second of two. The first one is essentially an introduction to implicit bias to give people information and basic tools around it. The one tomorrow is an advanced session for people who have that familiarity, and you can think about it more as a workshop for people to design their own intervention. We know that learning about implicit bias isn't enough. You actually have to change the way you make decisions. And so that's what the second one is focused on.
That sounds pretty uncomfortable. It's not too late to join this discussion. Phone number is 800-838-3760 or email us at jx@jeffnet.org to talk about implicit bias, the things that you may not know that you know. I'm Emily Curitan, and our guest is Dr. Eric Gervin. Eric, you talked just now about designing your own intervention system. How did this unfold in your own life?
So in terms of learning about it, we actually know quite a bit more about implicit bias and how it operates, unfortunately, than we know what to do about it. And so a lot of what's gone on interventions is looking to areas where people have been successful and trying to combine those with laboratory research about what seems to affect or reduce the effects of implicit bias. And it turns out, so for example, if I'm talking to a group of people at the university, there may not be a lot of studies about a university setting in particular. So what we try to do is use examples from other settings, talk about them and what worked what seemed to work well in those settings, and see if people can translate those into their own workplaces or decisions.
What are some examples of things that work well for people once they sort of realize that even when you're not trying to be biased, you can be?
Yeah, so building on the example we had before of areas where you have a lot of discretion in your judgment, a couple of things that people have tried in those settings that seem to work pretty well is, first, if you can, removing the information that would indicate sex or race or ethnicity. The classic example of that is with orchestra auditions. It used to be that orchestras were primarily male, and somebody figured out at some point that we don't really care who's playing, we want good music. So most orchestra auditions now are done behind a curtain, where the people who are evaluating them actually don't see the individual who's playing. And some orchestras actually have gone on to put carpeting on the floor of the auditions because we know that high-heeled shoes make different sounds than the kinds of shoes that men usually wear. And even subtle cues like that can affect people's judgment. So if you can blind or remove information from resumes, for example, if you're in a hiring position, at least for early stages, that can be helpful.
Fascinating. I'm just thinking about trying to, you know, cover the click of heels, and also how it jives with a, you know, there's a saying, the more things change, the more they stay the same. And it's got me thinking about the role of political correctness. You know, in your experience working with people on how biases affect their decisions, do you see less discrimination in the world, or do you just see it taking a sneakier route in?
It depends on, I guess, compared to when. We know from, you know, there's a lot of change has happened since the 1940s and 50s in our country, a lot of positive change. And we know that there are still differences, race, ethnicity, gender, based differences in how successful or how wealthy or what kind of jobs or other types of opportunities people might have. And a lot of different fields study them. Sociology, for example, might study how structural differences that have become embedded in our economy from earlier decisions might affect people. So, you know, it used to be, for example, that African Americans couldn't get home loans. And you might study how that affects the ability of the rates of African American homeownership now. Implicit bias is kind of a psychological perspective on the same problem, but it's less about things that somebody did a long time ago and more about our particular decisions now. So we know, for example, that African Americans tend to pay more for automobiles than people who are not African American. They tend to get that offer. The question is why? What's going on in the salesperson's head? And in that example, psychologists might try to distinguish between an explicit bias, which is something that somebody would consciously believe or endorse, what we would think of as classic racism or sexism, and try to distinguish that from implicit bias, which is the person genuinely thinks that they ought to be treating people equally, and they still aren't.
So how do you get at that? I mean, we talked earlier about how identifying implicit bias is a lot easier than doing anything about it, but how do you identify it in your workshops?
Yeah, so I give them, what I do in the workshops is basically work through the background, a little bit of background examples. It tends to be very interactive for how implicit bias works in our brain. So one thing I do is use something called the Stroop task, which is Stroop test, yeah. Uh-huh. It's about a 100-year-old cognitive psychology study, and it basically works by having people read words for colors. So, example, you might read the word green and the word red and those sorts of things. And if they're written in the same color ink as the word is, it's very easy to say what color it's written in. If they're written in a different color ink than the letters mean, then it actually is difficult for people to say quickly what color it's written in, because the automatic portion of your brain is trying to get two pieces of information at the same time. So we use exercises like that in the workshops to get people to understand or experience how this automatic portion of their brain is influencing the way they see the world all the time. And after we lay that foundation, then we move into how we do this with social groups and other people, too.
I took a test in researching this interview, an implicit assessment test, I believe it was
implicit
called.
Implicit association test, yeah.
Implicit association test. Do you use those in your workshops, or would you care to describe? It really hurt my brain, to be honest.
The implicit association test is probably it's the most common measure of implicit bias, but it's not the only one. There are lots of them.
And you can find one simply by Googling implicit association test.
Yeah. Harvard has a nice demonstration website that has several different versions of them. And so, yeah, I'd encourage everyone to take them and take about 7 minutes to do one. And there's lots of different kinds. Implicit bias isn't just about race or gender. There's also politics, religion, obesity, a wide variety of other things in there. And it basically works similarly to the Stroop task in that what it asks you to do is match certain words that you see to sort them into categories. So for one of the ones that I use in the workshop, at least in PowerPoint, so it's not as good as the implicit association test, but it gets people to experience it, is one that about people's implicit associations between males and careers or work outside the home, and women and family or caregiving.
Mm.
So that kind of implicit association test, right, will have categories of male names, female names, family-related words, and career-related words. And you'll see one word at a time, and your job is to try to categorize them in the appropriate category.
And there is a right answer, correct?
You're actually trying to categorize them. So they're all set up to be unambiguously male names, female names, career-related words like office and manager, and family-related words like children and the word family itself, for example. So you'll see one of them at a time, and you'll try to categorize them. And one of the times you do it, male names and career-related words will be categorized with the same button, and female names and family-related words will be categorized with another button on your computer keyboard.
So you're essentially sorting male and career words into one pile and female words and family or caretaking-related words into another pile together.
Right. So you do that, and that's what we consider to be the stereotypical association. So the question is whether you do that, and then they switch the categories, so you're categorizing female words and career-related words in one category, and male names and family-related words into a separate category. So you do basically the opposite of the first one.
And that's where my brain started to hurt when I took one of these about sexuality and did this essentially this exercise with gay and straight and good and bad as the words.
And so that's basically the way it works, and how it comes out or how it measures implicit bias is the speed and accuracy with which you do those two different tasks. So if you're really fast and accurate at categorizing the male names and business words at the same time and female names and family words at the same time, but slow and inaccurate, with the opposite pairing, then that suggests that you have a strong implicit bias for males and careers and females and caregiving or homework.
So when you do exercises like this in a group setting with people, real life humans, do you encounter people who may be very attached to the idea that they aren't sexist or racist or any of the is, and then aren't pleased with their results or maybe some of the self-discovery that goes on? And is that part of the process?
It is part of the process. A lot of it comes down to approach.
How so?
And part of the reason that I do this group task first and try to go through a few other exercises before getting to implicit bias is to show people that basically what we started off with, this categorization, automatically categorizing, is a natural way our brains work. It's not just about race and gender. It's about colors. It's about everything.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's that tends to, I think, get people past the defensiveness in the sense that it is that way. And also, it's not really like I'm calling them racist or sexist, because we distinguish between that from the explicit
mm-hmm.
versions and implicit. It's something that, unfortunately, most people do. Everyone categorizes. Most people have these social biases. At least that's what the results of the research suggests. And so it's about basically just taking ownership and trying to get it so that your behaviors match up with your values.
So, Dr. Eric Gervin, with about 30 seconds left here, what is step one towards designing your own intervention once you come to term with your biases?
Yeah, the best thing that you can do is try to, you're going to categorize, it's what we all do. The best thing you can do is that when you catch yourself categorizing, try to stop yourself and think of the things that are not, that are counter-stereotypical. Think of, for our earlier example, think of women who are working outside the home and men who are stay-at-home dads, and try to counter the stereotypes in that moment.
All right, countering stereotypes and hopefully changing them with Eric Gervin. He is JD, PhD professor at University of Oregon School of Law. Thank you so much for joining us today,
Thank
Eric.
Thank you, Emily.